August 30, 2017, it's the Watt from Pedro Show. Thank you.
Talk about what started you off in life. Poverty. Oh. And the depression. I started off in life at that time. You know, I felt a certain amount of responsibility as a worker to help the Spanish people, the workers and the farmers. I felt like I should do what I could to help them. It was 1936. Franco had already revolted. what does it mean to be the last veteran? All the rest of the guys are gone, women and men both. If it meant that I could play a certain part, because I'm the last guy, I would.
Walk for Pedro show in Pedro, but now with Brother Matt, he's still recovering from the hip surgery, but he's coming along. So everybody, thank you for the well wishes you've been sending him. Through the wonder of those software engineers in Estonia and their creation Skype, I'm not exactly man alone. I am in a two-way with Dan Kaufman there. In you're in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, that's right, Mike, in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
Greenpoint Park. I think that's where we conked last in May.
Oh, that's man. Not right.
But anyway, I'm very honored to have you on the show. You got this record, this live album you did with Valina Brown and your band Barbez, which I played a lot since you've been flowing me stuff. Mr. Zorn's Thaddeus label, and Zadok, I should say, sorry. But let's go way back, Dan. What's your earliest music memory that you got in your head?
Oh, God. Maybe buying Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap with my sister. Then I got pretty early into the hardcore scene in Madison, Wisconsin, where I grew up.
What about when you were a boy, Dan? Was there music in the house?
Definitely. My mom was a harpist. She was a classical harpist,
okay,
and my dad.
Okay, so you had musicians, okay, not just listeners.
Yeah. And they were really, they did a lot of. My dad grew up singing in the high holidays for the Jewish holidays until his voice changed. He would be rented out to synagogues. He grew up in Queens, and he could actually make some good money. My grandmother, they were not well off at all. They lived in a small rent-controlled apartment in Corona, Queens. And
we're just talking about the Ramones.
Exactly. Yeah. And he had a really nice voice and would sing the High Holidays at various congregations. So he and my mom were both, they met. Their first date actually was singing Renaissance madrigals. That was the time.
Wow.
Very innocent in 1960. So I grew up around a lot of music, classical and Jewish music.
You think he had like maybe a future being a cantor?
Or he just did this as a boy? Yeah, I mean, he did it, and then his voice changed, and it wasn't.
That's right. That's
as desirable. But yeah, he did have an exceptionally nice voice, even later, but as a kind of professional musician, it kind of ended there.
Okay. But your mom did harp.
My mom did harp. My great uncle was actually a bass player in Toscanini's NBC Symphony. He was in the Navy. He grew up playing jazz in like Chicago kind of Al Capone style nightclubs. Never went to college, went to high school, then moved to New York after the war. And got an audition, was gigging around, got an audition for this new NBC symphony and got the gig. He was an upright bass player.
This is your mother's brother?
It's my mom's uncle. He's still alive.
So your great uncle.
My great uncle.
Okay.
And he's an amazing character. He told me like when he was in the service, he actually jammed with Nat King Cole at a nightclub in the village. He asked to sit in, and Nat King Cole kind of demurred, and he sort of had tears in his eyes, and then he said, okay, you can play one song with us. And they were kind of blown away, because he can really play, he's really great. And he sat in for like several numbers with them. It was like a real high point for him. But he was a classical musician. So there was always music, I guess, around my house, like from my family. But then I got into
hardcore.
Exactly.
Yeah. after a little detour with AC/DC.
Exactly. That was very early. But there was a lot happening in Madison, as you probably know and remember.
Well, Madison is a college town. It's in between two lakes.
Exactly.
You know who we just lost that lived there for maybe the last 40 years of his life was a Clyde Scuffelfield, incredible drummer man.
I know. I used to see Clyde around. He had a Monday Night Blues Jam at
OK. That's right. I heard about that.
Yeah. And it was just a real happening time. I mean, you were coming through all those bands, Black Flag. And for us, it was a lot of the local bands, like, you know, De Kreutzen, Tar Babies.
Bucky. Yeah, my gigs in those days were put on by a guy named Tom Layton. Great cat.
Tom Layton, I remember him. Right. I remember him.
He did all my gigs, you know, a lot of different pads. Buddies with Robin, who played was first bass player for Tar Babies.
Right, Robin Davis, yep.
Right. Actually, I first met him when he was doing Helper Man stuff with the Hooskers on their first trip out here west.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so
always anyway,
so that's,
yeah.
But that's a little later on.
Yeah.
What about it, like in grade school or junior high? Did you play an instrument in class?
I was playing piano. My parents gave me piano lessons. I really hated my teacher. She always made me cut my fingernails.
So you had a bad experience with piano lessons.
I did. And then I hooked into the
guitar.
That's
not an uncommon story.
No. First, I had a great experience, actually. My first teacher turned me on to Scott Joplin, which was like a revelation. And then he moved away to Boston.
What was his name?
His name was Bill Lutz.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill, L-U-T-E-S, and he moved back to Madison to do the classical music show on the local public radio station, but he had moved away to get his PhD, but he had one of those, like, really open-minded perspectives about music, and he just let me kind of pursue my interests. And I remember I was obsessed with Scott Joplin and tried to convince my parents to drive 1,000 miles out of our way on a family vacation to go to Texarkana, Texas, to go to the Scott Joplin Museum. Wow. But they wouldn't do it.
Was there a piano in the living room?
Yeah, there was. There was. My mom could play. You know, she went to music school for harp, so everybody played. In fact, she, Harry Partch, she went to Champaign-Urbana, and Harry Partch was teaching there, so she was kind of like...
Wow.
She was interested in the avant-garde stuff.
Because when I played that town a lot, University of Illinois, kind of a doctor's school.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, I think this was a long time ago.
Okay.
And Partch wasn't, like, super welcome there. He was always kind of, like, shuffling around with his instruments, but he spent a couple of years there.
I think he was a California guy, really.
He was mostly California, but then he would, like, go to various gigs, like at university, to do his thing and spend like a year there maybe, and my mom happened to be there and she was really taken, you know, with him and his whole vision. So there was some weird stuff too. Mostly it was like cantorial stuff and like classical music. Yeah,
that's probably where she was coming from. What about you? You know, you're talking about the hardcore. Did you have some bands, some garage bands with buddies from school?
We did. Wanda and the Bushmen was our band. We used to play at a neighborhood center called the Wilmar Neighborhood Center. You probably played there. I don't know. But they had gigs every Friday and Saturday night. And, like, Sonic Youth would play there. But it was a lot of, like, local regional bands, like Crucifix.
Oh, that's Steve Shelley.
Yeah, yeah. And Doc Dart, they would play there almost like once a month.
Okay, Wanda and the Bushmen. What did you play?
I played guitar and I tried to write songs. We were really influenced by the Clash was a big influence on me, less so some of my peers. You know, there was a lot of orthodoxies in hardcore.
Oh yeah, I know that.
That's the way humans are.
Humans love to do that stuff.
Exactly. So, but I.
Dan, do you remember your first gig? Was it at this place?
It was at the Wilmar Neighborhood Center on Jennifer Street. Yeah, I was so. I could barely. I think I was probably 4'10". I was like, well, 13 maybe. I guess 13, and we were so nervous and excited, and it was amazing. I mean, every night. Every weekend night, it was just packed, and there'd be like 4 or 5 bands.
And you're writing original songs.
We were writing original songs, all originals.
That's great.
Necessarily hardcore, kind of slightly slightly Clash influenced.
Did you guys ever record?
No. Okay. No. It wasn't super, maybe on cassettes. I got to go through, my mom just passed a few months ago, so I think there's some stuff that I just haven't seen yet there. There might be some cassettes, but nothing, never in a studio or anything like that, or even a 4-track, you know, so.
Okay, let's listen to some of the new live Barbas.
Thank you. Sounds fine.
You're almost the same. You're all arranged. You're under me. Diamond.
For Pedro Show, I forgot to say what we started the show off with, John Coltrane doing Training In live from Stockholm 63, and then we had Barbez from the new album with Felina Brown doing Alas Barracadas, and now this chunk of music here, we had some more from that record, Barbez, Felina Brown, No Pasarán, then Yellowstone Apocalypse with Old Faithful, Tenko, Passing By the Night, the Space Pony, Butterfly Live tune there, Mold Omen, they might be out of New Jersey, Space Pony out of Ravenna, Italy, where they got Mr. Dante's bones, and Tenko out of Tokyo, of course, a Baker's Dozens, a Dozen of Hammers, and then Marco Serrato, the Mountain Builder, I think he's out of Barcelona. The Breakfast Cowboy, the Exotic Cop Lingo, that's Portland, Maine. Swenson Clane out of Canada with Scarecrow Hair, and finally, another track from the new Barbez of Alina Brown album, Pete Boggs Soldiers. So how long did this band last?
Wanda and the Bushmen?
Yeah, Wanda and the Bushmen.
Maybe 3 to 4 years. I kind of moved out of that and then started to get really into classical guitar. I studied with this Hungarian kid who was just brilliant at my school. His name was Daniel Biro. He's a composer now living in Victoria, British Columbia.
In Ireland, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know who lives there? The No Means No guys.
Oh, is that right? Is that right? Yeah. I remember, was DOA from there? Or, no, well, maybe they were from...
For sure, Vancouver. That area, Vancouver and stuff. But from the island, I know for sure No Means No guys are. And I think they quit. No more No Means No. Yeah. Very sad. Great band. So, okay, you start learning classical guitar. So what, like a nylon string Spanish?
Nylon string Spanish. I got really into
D-Boom,
like...
Yeah, D-Boom got into that stuff.
Is that right? Yeah, I remember.
Well, you can hear a track on Double Nickels. You know, we each had a solo song. And he had one called Cohesion, which is basically a kind of a take on La Linda, you know, old flamenco.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I learned that tune. And I remember that tune. I forgot the name of it. But
I think
even
The Doors kind of appropriated some of it. They call it Spanish Caravan.
Is that right? Yeah, that sounds right.
One of the records. But La Linda, I think, is the original Spanish. Okay, so... You're not really rocking out with the guys, then. You're just doing band alone, self-study, right?
Self-study, and then I went to conservatory for like 2 years at University of Wisconsin and dropped out because I realized I didn't want to be a classical musician. It was too rigid, and I loved the music.
People don't understand about that, but they have a certain kind of thing you buy to put your foot on.
Right? Yeah, the foot pedal.
The foot pedal, but it's not for like turning on a fuzz control. It's just to make sure you got a certain kind of height on your leg.
That's right. That's right. And now they have the pillow too, which is
The pillow.
Yeah. Man, they didn't have the pillow. Maybe if they had the pillow back then, I might have stayed with it. But no. Then I moved to New York, and I'm sure you know Swans.
Of course, Michael. In fact, Michael's from up the hill here from Pedro, Palos Verdes.
Is that right? I forgot he was from California.
Yeah, he had a band here for a little while in the... not just right after the Mask days, the other Mask on San Monica Boulevard. I think they were called... I don't know. I can't remember the name. Something Cripples or Strict ID or... I can't remember, but he went to New York City and did all the music that he's known for now, yeah.
That's right.
Okay, well, so you meet Michael Gira.
Oh, I didn't meet him, but I became friends with Norman Westberg.
Guitar man that's played in Swans.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a weird thing, I'm on an album with him.
Is that right?
You know, because of the wonder of the internet, right? You can provide tracks without being there.
Oh, is that Carla Kilstad's record?
No, this is a guy from Cleveland named Matt Waskovich.
Okay.
And he's done something called Hidden Rifles. And Norman, there's two guitar men, and Norman's one of them.
Oh, I love Norman. Yeah, he's just one of the best. And that's great. I'll have to seek that out, Mike. I didn't know.
No, it's brand new. It's brand new.
Okay.
And in fact, I think maybe it's still another month till it came out. I hope I didn't blow it. So meeting Norman is a big change.
It's a big change. And he was quitting a band. I was working at the Strand Bookstore.
Wow, and a lot of guys have worked at that store.
Exactly, yep. And
I think Dick Hale and Tom Verlaine.
Yeah, Verlaine used to come in all the time.
No, but I mean, in the early 70s, they actually worked there. I think I just finished the memoir by Dick Lloyd.
Oh, is that right?
I think he worked there, too. Terry York and all that stuff. Yeah.
Maybe Patti Smith, too. But yeah, it was a point of entry for all of us lost souls, you know, moving to New York to start band.
Tim Wright,
Tim Wright worked there.
The Peru Ubu guy who turned into a DNA guy with Ardo.
Exactly, he was there when I was there. Yeah, we became friendly. I remember Tim. He was also driving a cab at night. It was quite an amazing experience. And Norman would come in, and we became friendly, and then he was quitting a band named Sulfur, which was a pretty amazing kind of Lower East Side band, sort of connected to this scene. I don't know if you ever heard of this band called Mother Headbug.
No, I know about Elliot and Carbon.
No, Elliot, no, it was kind of a little bit connected to that scene, but this was sort of guys from Cop Shoot Cop.
Oh, yeah, I remember those guys.
And then
two bass players.
Yeah, two bass players. So Mother Headbug was an offshoot of them, and Sulfur was an offshoot of that. Okay. And I was the guitar player for a bit, and I found that I really loved playing rock music again, and it was amazing. And then I started Barbez out of that because Sulfur kind of broke up soon after, and I just it didn't work out for me and them. But
did Sulfur ever record with you?
It did, not with me. No, with Norman. The record had come out already. It's a great album. It's called Delirium Tremens, I think. It's really great. It was like with 10 instruments. They had a lot of unusual instruments, like, you know, somebody just playing floor tom and then, you know, violin. And it was really great music. It kind of inspired me to do my own thing. And there was a lot of that stuff happening in New York at that time, people bringing in different kinds of instruments. And
what time are we talking about?
Like 94 or 5, maybe, something like that. Even earlier, probably going back, but when I'm starting to get into it, like from 94 to like the late 90s, that time there was a lot of like kind of experimentation in the rock scene here. There was a lot of stuff happening at the Cooler. You probably remember that club.
Yeah, but that was on the other side, wasn't that west?
Yeah, it was all the way west in the, like...
It was, like, where they did the meatpacking and shit.
Yeah, the meatpacking.
I think it was once, like, maybe a Cooler or something shit.
It was, yeah, yeah.
Where it got its name, maybe. And I know John Zorn was big. It was called the Lower East Side scene and a lot of avant-garde.
Yep, and Elliot was always a big...
Well, Elliot, I think, was way ahead of that curve in a way.
Oh, he was. But he was, like, kind of, like... one of those towering figures over the scene, you know.
Still towering to me. I love the man. Look, we made it to the end of the first hour, August 30th, 2017 edition, Watford Pedro Show, special guest Dan Kaufman. Hold tight for hour two. August 30th, 2017, it's the second hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
Spanien's Himmel breit ist eine Stelle, über unsere Schusten gräben aus, und der Morgen bruscht uns aus der Ferne, vergessen um neu kommt hinaus. Above our trenches in the plain.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with Barbez doing Freiheit live, Valina Brown, then Love Theme. That's nephew Alex. It's something for this new Twin Peaks, or not new, but revived. Docklands, Yamate, and Plum Garden. No longer Dirty Beaches, it's Love Theme. And then Brendan Enter Ensemble. That's from over here. This cat gave this to me in the different Highland Park. You must have that gentrified thing over there that completely changed his neighborhoods. But this guy, Brendan, quite a composer, in a tune called Start. Then Nels Klein from his new double album, or latest, The Bond. Brand new out of Cleveland, Dual Decibel System, Lampina. And finally, Nanoface with We Machines. Okay, you put in some time with Sulfur, but you said that led up to Barbez.
Yeah.
Where did Barbez come? What's the story on that?
Well, the name, I was living in Paris for about 6 months, and it's the name of a neighborhood I lived in called, that was like a really like heavily North African and West African, really nice, interesting, diverse place, and very vibey. And so we had my childhood friend, Carl McGuire, my best friend growing up in Madison. He was in New York, and he played accordion. And then we were looking for people. We advertised in the Village Voice and found a drummer.
You left Paris?
No, it was back in New York. I just took the name from that neighborhood.
When you lived there 6 months. I understand now.
Exactly. So, and then
you're running ads. Hey, by the way, I heard The Voice is no more.
The Voice is gone. Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be online still, but no more print.
No more print.
Yeah.
So you ran an ad in The Voice.
We run an ad in The Voice. It was something like, interested if you like Shostakovich, the Kreutzmann, and I don't know what else. It was a funny ad. But we were, we kind of started from there, and there was a lot of personnel changes pretty soon after.
Oh, so there was takers right away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not right away.
But you and your buddy were the core.
We were the core. Then a great bass player named David Cannonstein, who joined us. He was in a band called Vardo, which, this woman, I don't know if you ever heard of this band called Fawn Fables, but they're kind of part, she's part of the Sleepy Time. Well, she's...
Oh, yeah, I remember those people. But they were from the city. They're right? SF.
Yeah. Well, she lives in... They live in the Bay Area now, but she was in New York, and so she had this band Vardo, and David was in that band.
Well,
so
because you said earlier the violin lady... She's one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a small world. It's a small world, Dan. But you know what I want to get into? Okay, you take this name from the neighborhood you lived in Paris.
Yeah.
But you and your buddy, Mr. McGuire, did you have a musical kind of focus?
Yeah, well, we wanted to break up. We wanted to...
the guys on accordion, you wanted something. You weren't going to do a... What was that guy? Dick Cantino? Who was the last great accordion rock star, right?
Yeah, no, it wasn't that.
Dick Cantino or something like that.
That sounds right.
I think that was in the 50s.
We were definitely trying to rock it. And we were, I think that was... It kind of came out of that sort of... dark kind of New York stuff, that band Mother Headbug that I was telling you about. But it was also like our own thing. It was hard to describe. We were both kids from the Midwest. And as I said, like the Kreutzmann was one of the biggest influences on me. I loved their sound. And
yeah, they were trippy. Minutemen got to play gigs with them.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they were...
Madison, Milwaukee, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Who else was there? Bulldozer, I think. Killdozer
too. Yeah, Killdozer's from Madison.
I think one of them's a lawyer now that lives in SoCal, though. But anyway, because why I'm asking, Dan, is because you said there's a lot of dudes coming in and out of the band. So what made it like, hey, you're a keeper. Hey, you're a, like, bye-bye.
Well, it was more like the New York thing where people get busy and, you know, it's hard to keep. Well, for the first few years, it was pretty stable. We were expanding more than anything. We added a marimba player, which was kind of unusual. We were looking to kind of break up the sound of, you know, bass guitar and drums, and but also bring that spirit to our music of, like, still the rock spirit, but with, like, a different kind of orchestration. And then pretty soon I met a really, one of my dearest collaborators, this incredible theremin virtuoso, Pamelia Kirsten, who now is Pamelia Stickney. She and I hit it off. She was doing a show, a solo theremin show at the Planetarium. She's actually from Irvine. And she's incredible. She joined the band. And we just kind of kept growing kind of organically with what we were doing musically, taking in different things. We started doing a couple classical covers, like our renditions of, like, Alfred Schnittke, this Russian composer.
Well, it seems like a lot of stuff on this new record is from Spanish Civil War.
This is all songs from the Spanish Civil War. This is another obsession of mine that I've had since I was a kid.
Okay, let's listen to Song of the United Front.
Pistol to his head. He wants no servants under
let me tell you this. Change is what this boy likes. Moving on to something new. Yeah, change is just what this boy likes. America always has been rumbling, clattering with change. A land with no antiques. Worthless, fast-collecting collectibles. Now, the past two decades have exploded with change for us all. My peaceful time from youth changed, and I cut my teeth running like a dog and grabbing what I could get. If it is roadkill, it is not wasted. We have short-changed destiny to cram as much as possible into what we have now. Our lives, our yards, our bank accounts. The only way to get unstuck is to jump and it hurts. But I jumped to stay ahead of the light that would leave me a singed husk. I would jump when the unions are broken, saying goodbye to brothers and furniture. I jump when the money is low and just no edge to stand on. I jump when my city seems useless and they have run out of places to go. I am jumping into change now, foreshortened and brutal. And I have got a grip on reality so I don't get dizzy moving. The stability of the last generation, even my quiet childhood, might as well have been 3,000 years ago because can't hear them talking in the cell phones, won't listen, portable radios on, don't really stand around anyway. Don't stay around by not moving too fast. I make progress and bring about change among everyone hurrying around me, making the normal seem so strange.
Every night I pray and see the world made free.
Watch for Pedro Show. We heard a song, United Front. After that, Feel the Ultimate Joy. Towards Resolve, A Pillar Being Shattered Within You, Part 2, by Nazoronai. I think that's K.G. Hino. He's one of the members there. Healers with Weekends on Death Street. Rough Mix from Rent Party doing Welcome to Catastrophe, both those Chicago area. Joe Brewer out of Madison, Jack Brewer's cousin from Sacred Trust, with a Change and Movin' poem. Out of Osha Hut with Little Green Men, Little Green Pills, and finally N from Jimmy Rosso. So, yeah, let's talk about this Barbez album. Ciao Bella?
Bella Ciao.
Sorry.
It's kind of a
trippy focus. I don't know if you listeners out there know it, but there's an old tradition of Jewish music in Rome. Explain, Dave.
Yeah, the Roman Jews are this really, they've been in Rome for more than 2,000 years. They came before the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, and they have this kind of unique music that sort of developed over those centuries that's sort of different than other Jewish traditions in Italy and the rest of Europe. They're not considered Sephardi or Ashkenazi, the two main designations. Anyway, this composer named Yotam Haber turned me on to these melodies, and I fell in love with them, and I approached John Zorn, a guy that supported us before and really amazing composer and friend who saxophone player, amazing human. And I said, you know, I'd like to do a record kind of a radical interpretation of these melodies, you know, in our context. And he was like, great. So we did that. And I went to Rome to kind of learn more about them. And I heard some of they were preserved from being lost forever by a kind of the Alan Lomax of Italy, this guy named Leo Levi, who recorded a lot of elderly Jews after the Holocaust in Italy singing these songs. And they're archived at a library there. So I went to hear them and made some mental notes.
Dan, this is kind of a cappella?
These are a cappella melodies. Yeah, that's how they were preserved. And some people tried to notate them. It's like hard to notate because it's very, you know, it's like an old blues person. I mean,
like sea shanties.
Yeah. They're like all of that stuff, very folk tradition, passed along.
Yeah, you had to hear the guy sing it, and then you sing it to the next guy. Yeah.
Exactly. And they were in danger of being lost a little bit because they hadn't been used in the synagogue for quite some time, so only these elderly people that had survived remembered them. But he saved them.
Thank you, Mr. Levy. It takes a brave cat like that.
It really does. When I was there, I kind of got interested in the period of the occupation of Rome when the Nazis took over the city, and there was a lot of resistance activity that kind of inspired me. I was walking down a street one day, and they left like one building still with bullet holes in it because they wanted people to remember where this big partisan action had happened, where it was the biggest action against Nazis in Nazi-occupied Europe, where these partisans blew up a convoy of German soldiers marching. And anyway, that kind of stayed with me, and I sort of connected it, and Bella Ciao is a famous partisan anthem, so I kind
of
wanted...
Of course, that's why I felt so stupid about saying it backwards.
So we kind of merged it, and we did a cover of that song using this great singer, Dawn McCarthy from Fond Fables, as a vocalist. She, of course, the magic of the internet, she did her track from I think, Santa Rosa or something, or Oakland. But that was the story of that record. So mainly it's instrumental. Our take on it really pretty radically changed from what...
I think that's okay.
You know, but...
Better than trying to do a top 40 cover of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Dan, we're at the end of the hour two, August 30, 2017 edition of Walk for Pedro Show. You're my special guest. Everybody hold tight for hour three. August 30, 2017, it's the third hour. Watch the Pedro Show.
Madre que viene.
What for Pedro show, we start off the third hour with Los Cuatro Generales, Barbez live with Helena Brown, FGH out of Hamburg with Magma, Murnau B, I think they're Barcelona, Auto Destrucio Dos, David Garrard out of Massachusetts, Temporal Dissonance, Chato Ghetto over here, west side of SoCal, Chris Candy, Nightingale. And finally, Barbez with Valina Brown doing Se Me Quieres Escribir. Yeah, let's get to this record here. This celebration of Spanish Civil War stuff.
Yeah, that came about because I'm a writer too, and I've had a long kind of interest in the Spanish Civil War, sort of obsession. And I met when I was in high school. One of my classmates' grandfather was a volunteer in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, which those guys went over there to try to defend the government against these fascist revolt, was aided by Hitler and Mussolini. And I was struck with it and stayed with me. And then I kind of met some of these guys in New York that were still alive and befriended them and wrote some articles about them. And Barbez started playing these reunions of the Lincoln Brigade, even though there weren't many vets left.
And I think in those days, like half of them didn't make it, right?
Oh, yeah. Like a third died over there. Okay, were buried in Spain. And a lot were injured. They were really like almost like the shock troops. But they were instrumental in saving Madrid. I think I was just kind of moved by the solidarity, the spirit of solidarity that they and other, it was like kind of, I think it was 40,000 people from 52 countries that went to Spain to try to help. So it was a labor of love.
Did you ever, while you got interested in this stuff, did you read Mr. Orwell's Amish Catholic?
I did read that one, yeah, and I read that Hemingway too. I was, I think the thing that stayed with me, Mike, more than anything, was this firsthand account of a guy named Clarence Kalin that came to my alternative high school in Madison, and that was just like, it was just a sort of one of those, I can't explain it, but when you can kind of leap across generations, there was something that really stayed with me. I was maybe 16 or 17 years old, and it was very vivid, you know, what he described, and I kind of couldn't believe what they had done. So
it sounds like the personal experience was profound on you.
It really was, and I've always been sort of politically conscious and sort of interested in politics, and it just stayed with me. It was there, and then I had a chance to write about it and meet some of them many years later in New York and meet, there's an amazing organization. They're the ones that funded the record. They're called the Abraham Lincoln Brigade Archives. And they preserve the memory and the legacy of the Lincoln Brigade. They teach it in high schools. And it's really like a moral lesson in a way, like, what do you do? Especially relevant in these times, you know, when things are turning really south, and the example of solidarity, you know, to other people who might have a very different experience than you, but you can still empathize with them, and that's sort of the message. And these were just amazing, amazing human beings. And I got to meet the last, I interviewed several, and then about on a couple of the tracks, we wove in a couple of interviews with.
Yeah, that's where you hear the speaking, right?
Exactly. So that was a kind of, I felt like maybe they should have the last word somehow.
Or at least speak for themselves, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, let's listen to Venga Aleo. Thank you.
I've been dreaming about watching you like a cherry tree.
I'm Love you. bring my own tears all the world to go French, French. How can I get up in front of a crowd and talk about supporting the Spanish Republic when people are going over there to fight? And that's what pushed me in that direction. And then I began to see pictures of what's going on. And there were pictures of bombardment in Madrid. It was the place where I learned that I didn't have to know that I was going to win in order to fight. That became the main thing in my life. And that is that if you resist, if you win or lose, you resist.
Juan Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Barbez and Valina Brown doing Venga Jaleo, then Zinia Rubino's Cherry Tree, Erotic Birhan and his Heretics out of Zagreb, with Rock and Roll Revolution number 5, Senor Al from Southern London doing Peace Be Upon You, and finally Barbez and Valina Brown doing Viva la Quinche Brigada. So, I have no more Barbez to play until you come up with some new stuff. But you were just saying you got something on the side burner?
I do have a little project with my drummer, John Bollinger, who's in Barbez. And we have a little band called John and Dan, just very all kind of... we did a little tour of Europe. We're working on a record. We're about halfway through it. I want to give a shout-out to Mr. Martin BC, who recorded all of our stuff and did amazing work. I mean, because it's live, but we added some special guests and we mixed it really, you know, it was multi-track, so we mixed it with Martin, and he's done every single Barbez recording. It's just an incredible
I got to be in the studio when he was doing Evil by Sonic Youth.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You did a track.
It was where he had the control room in the same room where you play. There was no booth. Yeah, there was no separate booth. It was the trick. I've never seen a studio like that before.
It's changed a bit since then.
No, this was in Brooklyn at a time when there wasn't really a lot of stuff going on in Brooklyn.
That's right. That's right. Martin's been there since, I think, 1980. He started.
No, he's a pioneer. Yeah. And the other guy after him, Cleveland guy, Tony Mamone.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But we've done everything with Martin, and so me and John have this
what's his name?
What's that?
Name, Brad's name.
It's John and Dan.
Okay.
It's John and Dan. Yeah, the straightforward.
Yeah, sure.
You can't get more straightforward than that.
No. So you're about halfway done, so something's going to come with this, just guitar and drums.
It's guitar and drums. Well, actually, I play a little, bass. We switch instruments a lot during it, and there's some singing.
Yeah, because you know these bands with just guitar and drums, I'm always thinking that poor lonely kick drum.
I know. Well, like one of the bands like Cinema Cinema, right? There, you know, yeah, so. But yeah. No,
the,
I know.
I think the first one was Dexter, Flat Duo Jets.
That's right. So, but that's what, but yeah, but Barb has a work on, we're going to do something new. You know, all of us have small children. It's just a little harder, but we're all just, it's like a family. You know, there's a lot of love there and a lot of, whenever we get together, it's just a lot of, you know.
A great man once said, no wine before it's time.
Exactly. But we're all psyched about this music because it was it's an interesting, you know, time to put it out there with what's going on. And I think, you know, it's nice that if people can think about, like, where those songs, like, you played Peat Bog Soldiers, you know, that was a song that was written in a concentration camp, the first one in Germany, 1933. The prisoners were all, like, left as prisoners, and they wrote that song there, and Paul Robeson then sang it to the volunteers in Spain when he went there. And it's just, I think it's just an important sort of message for this moment that, you know, that there can be such a thing as solidarity, and it's frightening a bit, you know, these revival of some of these groups, so maybe it's a good time to remember, you know, the opposition from that time. So
absolutely. And if you don't learn the history, you're condemned to repeat it, right?
That's right. Okay. That's right.
I really want to thank you so much for being on the show, Dan. I can't wait to hear this twofer side proj music and also the new Barbez.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's been such an honor and such a pleasure to speak
with
you.
Well, right back at you. So as soon as you get that, let's get you back on the show, okay?
That sounds great. All my best to you. Thank you, brother.
Right back.
Thank you.
Okay. August 30, 2017, edition Wap for Pedro Show. People, keep your powder dry.